Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
Welcome to Through the Smoke, radio at firehouse.com. This is Billy Goldfeder. This week we've got with us a couple folks from the International Association of Fire Chiefs, John Tippett and Amy Holman. We're going to be talking to them about the firefighter near-miss reporting system in just a few seconds. Before that, two interesting stories, or actually two interesting updates out of California that you may find of interest and may want to follow. One is a ruling of a firefighter's death out there, a Los Angeles rookie firefighter who fell off the back of a piece of apparatus last year, was ruled accidental. The conclusion backs up the initial findings late last year into the death of Jamie Foster, 25 years old, the first female firefighter to die in the line of duty in their 118-year history. Foster would just help her crew put out a fire in a house, single-family dwelling house. She fell beneath the fire apparatus as it backed across a residential street. The report says investigators could not determine an exact direct cause for Foster's death. However, the report cites as an indirect cause the fact that she was not wearing a safety strap as she stood on the tailboard of the apparatus as it backed up. Now, while fire department policy calls for the straps to be used by firefighters carrying out tasks in that department for tailboard safety duties, I guess that's to assist in backing up the rigs, the report says they're often not used. And in their recruit training, they do not include discussion of that strap. Well, and that's an interesting thing, is the fact that the strap wasn't used. But maybe there's a better way to apparatus back or to back up apparatus without standing on the tailboard. And again, we're not there. It's not our department. We're not involved. But just to us, it seems maybe there's a better way to back up your apparatus than standing on the tailboard, whether there's a strap or not. Just something to think about. Another situation out in California is that the Santa Clara County Fire Department was cited by the state safety investigators in California in the death of Fire Captain Mark McCormick. Apparently, the Santa Clara County Fire Department did not have a plan for dealing with live electrical wires at the scene of a fire, and it resulted in the death of Captain McCormick. I don't know many fire departments that have a plan for dealing with live electrical fires at the scene of a fire, but it's sure, like the other story, and most stuff we try and talk about here, is something for us to start thinking about now. Maybe we do need to train our members on what to do when there's wires down, where to place cones. I don't know, but it's certainly something to think about. It should be indicated, or it should be also noted, that Captain McCormick was very involved in safety out at the Santa Clara County Fire Department. And unfortunately, and so tragically, he lost his life. And our understanding, our condolences go out to the fire departments, both in Los Angeles as in Santa Clara County. There but for the grace of God go I, and we always have to remember that as firefighters, but we also have to do everything we can to try and learn from events like this, particularly in the death of Firefighter Foster and Captain McCormick. We'll be back in just a second. This is radio at firehouse.com. You're listening to Through the Smoke.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Okay, we're back. This is With the Smoke, radio at firehouse.com. I'm Billy Goldfeder. We've got now with us this week John Tippett and Amy Holtman from the International Association of Fire Chiefs Firefighter Near-Miss Reporting System. And currently my understanding is that it is a program that is a part of the IFC, but I think a long-term goal as this becomes will become a self-standing program, and we'll talk with them in just a few minutes. John is a battalion chief with Montgomery County, Maryland Fire and Rescue. John started as a volunteer years ago. Welcome, John.
Hi, Billy.
And we've got Amy Holtman, who I believe you told me you made a wrong turn one day and saw an ad for the IFC and ended up working for them.
I kept driving by the building and decided I wanted to work there.
Outstanding. I've driven by a lot of buildings and wanted to work there, but not necessarily that place. That's like the heart of it all, the IFC. There's always a lot going on there. It's a hectic place. But you have no fire service background at all, right?
No, my brother's a volunteer firefighter in Pennsylvania. But besides that, no, I don't know.
Excellent, which is good. It'll give some perspective here. The Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System, which is also firefighternearmiss.com as the website. John, where did this program come from? And this is a big week. You're kicking it off nationally. Where'd it come from?
Yeah, we are kicking it off this week. Actually, it'll be in August at FRI in Denver. And the program was really based or borrowed from a very successful program the aviation industry has had in place for about 28 years. Pilots file reports in an anonymous fashion, and the reports are de-identified. All identifying marks are taken out of them, and then they're presented to the aviation industry in general, so that they can learn from each other's events and not repeat them.
Well, who decided though that we need to be doing this in the fire service? I mean, somebody sitting around one day drinking a beer and says, "Oh, we need to do this," or what?
No, it's a little bit more detailed than that. Gary Breeze, executive director of the IAFC, attended a wildland conference back in the late 90s, 98-99. Saw a presentation. The wildland industry became interested in some new programs because they had such a problem with their fatalities, and they were looking to do something different. Technologically, they weren't having much success, and they thought they needed to try something different. So Gary was in attendance, thought it was a good thing for the fire service, called some people together, was able to cobble some grants together through the generosity of Dennis Smith and the United States Fire Administration, and that's what kind of kicked the program off. It was back in September 2000.
So Dennis Smith, who we, I mean, you'd have to have no pulse to not know who Dennis is. He's started off as a New York City firefighter, wrote report from Engine Company 82, founded Firehouse Magazine, and kind of the rest is history. Talk to me about that back in 2000. What did Dennis do and relationship with the IFC and Gary? And I mean, is it that Dennis has given money up through his foundations to support this?
Yeah, that's true. Dennis has had a very deep interest in firefighter safety, and he did put up some of the seed money to put the first task force together back in 2000. What they were looking at was two programs, crew resource management and near-miss reporting. And through his generosity, that got the first group together. Crew resource management was decided to be the first effort because it was thought to be a less expensive venture and was easier to impact. And then the near-miss reporting was thought to be a much larger scale program. And a second task force was put together that decided that they needed to take near-miss reporting to a separate level.
Very good. Very good. Why is this needed? I mean, why do this?
One thing that the task force has identified was that there were a lot of commonalities between the aviation industry and the fire service. A lot of technology was going into airplanes to make them safer, and they were continued to be crashed into the ground. The advent of the cockpit voice recorder demonstrated that it was really the human beings that were crashing the airplanes despite technology. And when the task forces were put together, they were comprised of aviation people and firefighters. And it was realized that we were going down the same path. We kept creating all this technology, new turnout gear, better apparatus, ABS brakes.
But damn it, we still had people
still
involved.
Killing people,
man, if we
right.
Could, well, and the issues were because of people.
Exactly.
Right? Our own people, us,
right.
Me, you, in some cases.
Exactly. So through near miss reporting, they determined that the more people shared their stories and experiences, and the wider the scale, the safer the industry became. And it was decided that near-miss reporting would be a benefit to us as well.
Why? I mean, we know if we wear our seatbelts, we won't get ejected as easily. We know if we wear a hood, we have less of a chance of getting burned. We know if we wear a mask, we have a less chance of getting smoke inhalation. So we already know that. What are you going to find out that's new?
Well, I think what we'll determine through the stories, and I know if you think back over your career, you've done things that you you think that, oh wow, man, I was pretty lucky. I'm glad I got through that.
Well, unless it was caught on tape, I didn't do it. Just so you understand that.
Well, one of the great things about the system is you don't have to be caught on tape. You can file your report and do it in an anonymous fashion, or in confidential fashion, really. And for a lot of people, there's been somewhat of a cultural change, really, thanks to what you've been doing with close calls and getting people to start talking about
the people listening to this can't see it, but he just gave me $200 in the process of that statement. Go ahead, John.
It was in $100 bills. But the facts that are out there, or that people are learning, and as we were doing the research on this, where we wanted to take this program, and thanks again to your support of the system and being part of that task force, the latest task force, is that we can change the culture of the fire service by talking about things over and over and over again.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. I was talking to some folks here at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, and the discussion was, how do you change the culture of the fire service? And I guess we've been asking that question for years. And I think we're starting to understand how we change the culture of fire service. And one of the key factors is what you just said, repetitiveness, over and over and over. So you see it, you see it, you see it, and eventually behaviors start to change. And there's other responses too. One way to change the culture of the fire service is to have no culture, meaning the probies, rookie school. They have no culture when they start other than what they got on the outside. So we have a chance to kick it off from them. And then, of course, trying to get those who are somewhat open to change. How do you think we change the culture of people who refuse to change? Amy said there was a guy that came by the booth today in Firehouse. We won't say where he's from.
He said he's not going to wear a seatbelt, he's not going to lose weight, he's not going to wear his hood, and he's not going to put the chin strap on his helmet. And he says that what he hears from the training academies and instructors, they don't apply to him. And he tells rookies, you got to do what you think is right and not listen to what everybody else has said has been true for them.
Do you run into a lot of that?
No, but they are the exception.
Yeah.
For the majority of people, I think, want to have a safety culture. And I don't think it's, a lot of people come up to us and say, well, how does my department become involved in this website? And although we want department support, it's really up to the individual. And I think that's how the safety culture will get changed, is individual making a decision that I'm not going to be a statistic, I'm not going to be one of the 100.
You've never been a firefighter. What goes on in your head, your heart, or whatever, when you hear some knucklehead talk like that? Because it's an embarrassment to any of us when you have somebody saying, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to continue eating 6 Big Macs for breakfast and all the other crap. Yeah.
He was proud that he is not following what everybody else is doing. When we were visiting some of our pilot departments over the course of the summer, we visited one department that had experienced line and duty deaths. And we visited the station and talked to the crew that was on duty the day the man died. And looking at the faces of those people in the room, part of the problem, I think, was because it was so soon since the guy died that they hadn't really had a chance to realize what happened. But I was looking around that room and I kept asking John, is this going to make a difference? Is this reporting system going to help those people understand that there doesn't need to be another funeral in that fire department? And I kind of had a moment of thinking, is this system going to work? We went to the next department and talked to those people, and they were all very supportive of the program. They've been using it. They've been printing off reports. So I think the system does work, but it's an individual thing.
Okay, great. We'll be back in just a couple seconds with John Tippett and Amy Holtman from the International Association of Fire Chiefs Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System.
Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
We're back with John Tippett and Amy Holtman from the IFC Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System. You talked about pilot fire departments, Amy. Now, let's just recap for those listening in. The idea came about, there's now going to be a national firefighter near-miss reporting system, but you talk about pilot fire departments. Did you have departments, and I obviously know the answer, but for the folks listening, you had certain departments test this out before you flew it?
Sure, I should go back a little bit. We created a task force with fire service experts and experts that deal with near-miss reporting on a daily basis from aviation and the military systems. From there, we moved to focus groups. We visited 8 different cities and asked firefighters, what would you want on a reporting system? What things are you looking for? And they all said, make it easy to use. We don't like forms. So we created a form that was on the line that people could use. We picked 38 fire departments from across the country, including your department in Ohio. And
well, what our firefighters liked is they could actually fill out the form while watching Andrea Mayberry. So there was a value there for us.
Yeah, that came up in focus groups too. We want to be able to fill out the form while watching TV. So we tested it out in these 38 departments that were picked volunteer, paid, and combination across the country, geographically diverse, large metropolitan departments and smaller departments. And then we visited the departments over the course of the summer and talked to the users, talked to the firefighters and said, what do you like about this screen? What questions should we be asking here? Are you going to use this system? What do you want out of it? So we've taken the information we've compiled over the course of the past 3 months. The site went live April 22nd.
And that site is live now, so firefighters can get online right now and type in firefighternearmiss.com.
Absolutely.
And that'll bring them to the site, and they can start exploring that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Absolutely. So we took the information we got from the pilot departments, we changed some things on the system based on their feedback, and we're ready to go. We're ready for people to get online, search reports, enter their own report, look at what's going on.
Very good. You used pilot departments combination, which is part paid, part volunteer. You used some volunteer fire departments, exclusively volunteer fire departments?
Yes.
Excellent. And some career departments. And that's good, and it's good you went around the country, because a volunteer fire department in Long Island is not a volunteer fire department in Florida, nor is it a volunteer fire department in New Mexico.
Right.
Each have their own cultures and differences, and that's great that you were able to seek that out. What's the cost?
Absolutely free.
No, I mean, what's it costing to run this program? Good try. Keep going.
The program is funded by the Department of Homeland Security and Fireman's Fund Insurance Company.
How much?
The first year grant was $1 million.
From?
From Department of Homeland Security and Fireman's Fund Insurance Company.
So Homeland Security, DHS, gave you $750,000. Okay. And Fireman's Fund provided the matching, the required matching funds. Is that basically what it is? Okay,
yes.
Cool.
We have second year funding secured, and we're working on third year grant proposal.
Are you in the first year funding right now?
Yes.
Still, and when does that run out?
September 30th.
Why is this money better spent with you than, say, the volunteer fire department that can't afford air packs?
Well, we know the system works. Aviation, the medical industry, military says near-miss reporting works.
But those are regulated agencies with much more discipline than we have in our organizations, and nowhere near as diverse as we are. A volunteer fire department can mean 100 things different to 100 different people. So convince me why this is going to work.
Well, it's a different approach to the safety initiatives that have already been out there. We feel that this reporting system can work because it does work in other industries. And even though they're regulated, there's so many similarities between the aviation industry and the fire service that it's going to work.
So have a little faith in the fact that the fire service might be able to make this work as well. John, some comments?
Well, I think one of the most important issues there is that it's always about people. Even though firefighters tend to think of ourselves as being different, we still put our pants on the same way as an airline pilot and the same way as somebody in the military. And one of the things that did come out of the task force meetings and the focus groups, for that matter, was the fact that it's about people. It doesn't matter about your training. It doesn't matter about your pay stub. It really doesn't matter what you do for a living. Human beings are responsible for about 70, well, human actions are responsible for about 70% of all catastrophes.
And Amy brought up about, and I will continue to pick on this individual that came by and talked to your booth today, because it's an embarrassment to all of us, about this guy that was carrying on an extra 100-something pounds with him and saying, I'll never wear a seatbelt, never wear a hard hat, or never wear my helmet, never do this, never do that. That's not the fire service. It really isn't. We see that, and yeah, they're out there, but the average firefighter wants to be protected, does not want to get themselves hurt, does not want to get somebody else hurt. I mean, and so that's, I think, gives us that light of hope that something like this can work. And, you know, that your, might I say, your innocence of not having any fire service experience and this excitement you have for it, where some of us, I mean, I remember the first time when I was called to be involved in this, I'm like, oh, great, yeah, this will work. But I'm into it, and I think it will work. And I really believe that we are in the middle of a major, major culture change in this business. And I'm very vocal about it. I feel it really started. It started by a lot of people doing a lot of stuff. But when Ron Sarnicky pulled everybody together for the National Fallen Firefighters Firefighter Life Safety Summit, it started, it was like a coach bringing all the players in. And everyone's bought into it. The unions bought into it. IAFF's bought into it. And they were involved in health and safety before the rest of us even thought about health and safety. National Volunteer Fire Council buying into it. IFC, that's a big deal. And we really are in the middle of change. As I said in last week's radio show, there were two significant apparatus accidents last week. Both units, everybody had their seatbelts on. I don't think they'd have had all their seatbelts on 2 or 3 years ago. So I think there is some change. Amy, jump on.
Well, people have been asking by exhibiting at Firehouse Expo, they ask, what are you going to do with this information? And there's two key things we're going to do with the information. One of them is identify those trends on a nationwide scale so that we can report information back to the fire service and let them know what's going on, gather data. My experience with the fire service is they like to keep moving forward, but not based on anything substantial number crunching. And you know, nobody thinks number crunching is all that exciting, but once we can see national trends, I think we can attack the things that are causing injuries and fatalities. And the second good outcome of this project is an educational source for people. They can go online, print a report, do a morning drill, do a drill night, stick on a bulletin board, and once again, it's that individual sharing a story about somebody else. And a guy was reading a report the other day, and he said, well, the lessons learned that this person wrote, that's the wrong lesson. He shouldn't have been in there in the first place. So I recommended to him to go back to his station, read the event of what happened to that gentleman, and then talk about the lessons learned, what they would have done in their department based on their SOPs to make a difference.
Outstanding. So a couple years ago, Gordon Graham and I started firefighterclosecalls.com, and people have asked, what's the difference? Our site is much more broad-ranged. Loads of information from lots of different places, more graphics, photographs, weekly fire drills. And I want to make it clear that not only do we have a cooperative relationship between the Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System, which is firefighternearmiss.com, and firefighterclosecalls.com, but we absolutely support each other. And this is not at all a competition because it's two different things. Yours is a much more scientific process to develop data, where ours is not specifically scientific, but just a collection of information that can be used in any way people want. So it's clearly a cooperative effort, and we're pretty excited about that, and we're involved in it. Gordon and I both sit on the advisory board as well.
When people ask me sometimes if this is competition with Firefighter Close Calls, and I said, Billy gave us the website address. Firefighternearmiss.com was his website address, and he's letting us use this for this project.
Yeah, it's totally, totally cooperative, and competition would normally require funding, and we don't make a nickel off our site. I want to jump back to a question that I'm not sure you answered, and John, you can respond back. $1 million is a chunk of change, and with fire departments out there that are poorly staffed, poorly equipped, old air packs, no integrated pass devices or no pass devices, how do you explain to the fire service why your program, Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System, which is really all our program because federal dollars funded it, why, if the feds had $1 million, why should they have chosen to give it to this project as opposed to divvying it out for more gear and things like that for fire departments? Why will this matter?
Well, I think it'll matter more than anything else because well-funded fire departments are still suffering fatalities and injuries. So it's not necessarily a matter of the equipment and technology. That's what the aviation industry found. No matter what bell or whistle they put on the airplane, the human beings figured out another way to corkscrew the thing into the ground. And what the federal government is doing is taking a broad-based approach to firefighter safety. There's clearly more need in the fire service than there will ever be dollars available. And they believe through the grant process and through the grant application process that the $1 million that they're spending on this program may be just as beneficial to that firefighter in that small volunteer fire department that doesn't have an air pack and still may believe they can make an interior attack on the fire, to teach them that that's not what they need to do, that they need to be cognizant of what's going on with the firefighting scene, and that if they learn through near miss reporting, they're less likely to be exposed to injury and fatalities.
We're talking to John Tippett and Amy Holtman from the IFC Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System. We'll be right back.
Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go.
All right, we're back with Amy Holtman and John Tipper from the IFC. This is radio at firehouse.com. Through the smoke, you may be confused. This is not Up in Smoke with Cheech and Chong, so if it is, change your channel. We're going to talk for a few more minutes about the Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System. Organizations that are sponsoring this, Amy and John, I talked about that a few minutes ago. Why don't you recap a little bit and share? Because almost everybody who wears bunker gear belongs to some organization, whether they belong to the IFC, the IFF, the Volunteer Fire Council, IFC VCOS, International Association of Black Professional Firefighters. Somebody belongs to something. Who's not involved in this?
Well, so far, we've received good responses from everybody that we've talked to. The IAFC is where the grant resides right now. The IFF came on board. Volunteer Combination Officers section of the IAFC also got on board. So they're the three main supporters. Through your contacts through NFFF and a number of other affiliations that you have, our contacts with those people, FDSOA, and even some of the agencies out there you may not even think about, have all indicated, at least informally, a willingness to be on board with the program. And I think that goes to the direct comment that the 16 initiatives touch all of us at all times. So anything that has to do with the 16 initiatives or can be tied to those 16 initiatives is going to be thought of as being a good thing by Progressive Fire Service people. Whether they're the rookies that have no culture or they're the people that are subject to cultural change, even some of the pariahs out there, like that gentleman earlier today that Amy came in contact with.
He's a piranha. You ought to see him in McDonald's. It's like a piranha. He just jumps back there and grabs all that food.
Grabs all of this stuff. So that pretty much, I mean, we're talking about just about every major fire service group that we've had any contact with has been interested in becoming either an informal supporter or a formal supporter.
Who's not interested in it? Anybody turned you down?
We haven't had anybody turn
outstanding.
Us down.
Outstanding. I guess as we start to wrap this up, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Really, it's one question, but I'm going to touch it in different areas. First of all, why does this matter to a fire chief?
Well, I think if you were to interview any fire chief that has suffered a line of duty fatality, they would tell you that they would go back and do anything possible to recover from that.
There's a big difference between a fire chief, firefighter, fire officer that has never experienced a line of duty death and one that has.
Oh, agreed.
It really, really changes how you think.
Yeah, the station that we visited that had suffered a fatality, it was Houston Station 46. The captain had died back in February, and I had a chance to talk to the battalion chief, and being a battalion chief myself, I could really empathize with him, having actually been through a couple of pretty significant near misses since becoming a battalion chief. And Amy was right. Those people will never be the same. They may not have ever digested that yet.
But why does this matter to the chief? You talk to the firefighters and the crews. Why does this program matter to the boss?
Well, the fire chiefs that we met with in the pilot departments, including Chief Tom Carr, who's the chief of my department, Montgomery County, has said that they do not want to suffer a fatality on their watch. It is so devastating to a department, and such a personal affront to any of the modern fire chiefs now, that they're looking for any means possible to avoid having to go through the fatality.
And the modern fire chief today would be, a modern fire chief 10 years ago wouldn't go to a fire, didn't even get involved, delegated everything, and then we had some disasters. This is obviously my thoughts. Today's modern fire chief is finding a balance that they still must be responsible for what goes on in the field. You can't delegate that all away. And what I'm seeing emerging is as that fire chief, and of course it depends on the size of your city and your jurisdiction, but I would say 10 years ago, the quote progressive fire chief was so distant from the operational aspect of the department that they weren't even part of the fire department in some respects. But I'm seeing a neat emergence of the fire chief who might have been the battalion chief or that captain 10 years ago saying, you know what, it's not all budget, it's not all administrative, I still have to be responsible to my people when they're responding and operating on emergencies.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. That was one of the things that the last two chiefs that we had in our county, particularly Chief Carr, has brought home, that he's still a firefighter. He wears a uniform. He doesn't wear a coat and tie. He does show up on fires, large ones and small ones. You may even find him showing up at a car crash if he happens to be in the neighborhood. I think that is the prevailing event. The prevailing event is that chiefs have evolved, just like you said, back into firefighters. They're no longer just the administrators at the far end of the office.
And those who are now fire chiefs that have never been firefighters are kind of screwed, aren't they?
I would think so.
Yeah, spent most of their career chasing ambulances, and now they suddenly got to figure out what an engine company is, but that's their problem, I guess, and their firefighters' problem, unfortunately. What does this matter to the fire officer in the firehouse? Captain, lieutenant, company officer.
Yeah, one of the very interesting things we found out in our pilot visits that captains and company level officers seem to have a particular interest here. Your firefighter close calls and the near miss reporting system have given new tools to these officers. They're looking for ways and means of being able to touch their people and give them instruction, find that balance between that lack of experience that they may have accumulated because fires are down.
It's an issue.
Their departments are not very busy. And this gives them a way to reach out and fulfill that knowledge base where they may be lacking any experience.
Well, in the response to a lot, you know, that's you probably walk in any firehouse, and one of the issues is the young guys talking about the old guys, back and forth. We got all these new people with no experience. Well, the answer to no experience is training, training, training. And although it's not the same as getting to a fire, the less experienced your people are, the more training they need. And that means every day pulling lines, climbing ladders, doing all that. And your site can help that by using, I think it was Amy that said that earlier. Here's an example of a close call. If you don't like how that department responds to the solution, discuss it with your personnel and maybe make a drill out of that particular situation to see how your department would handle it. I mean, that's a good example, right?
Yeah, I know most of the officers that work in my battalion and in my department have said that or commented that there are three sites that they normally visit. One is firehouse.com, one is firefighter close calls, and they've now started to go to the near miss reporting system.
There's actually four sites they regularly visit, but you're not allowed to discuss the fourth one they typically go to. All right. Joe or Jane firefighter could care less about most of the administrative stuff, reports, and all that other crap. Why does this matter to Joe or Jane firefighter, and why should they be interested in this program? Because really, if this is going to work, that's really your customer base. I mean, you know, the greatest chief in the world can say, all right, from now on, when you have a near miss, go to this site and report it. Yeah, okay, chief. And they leave, and that's it. So what are you doing to convince that firefighter, the one that's actually getting the job done, to go to the site and participate in the near miss reporting system? And aren't they, shouldn't they be nervous? Couldn't their department track down who filled this out, or, you know, figure out who did it or spy on them or something?
We don't believe so. One of the things that we've done is, of the 38 departments, each of them agreed that they would buy into that safety culture, or they were already participating in the safety culture, which said people are allowed to make mistakes, and when you make a mistake, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have your head lopped off.
But you also went to some departments that don't have a good reputation as a safety culture, and that's great that you did that.
Yeah, that's true. And they were tough sells. But there was almost always, at least in all of my visits, one firefighter that would sit at that kitchen table, which is what we're really looking at, is just taking that firehouse kitchen table and spreading it all across the country, that would stand up and say, you know what, this is a good thing. I will learn something from this. I do have a different outlook than you guys do. You know, they would always break away from that mold. And I think where Joe and Jane firefighter come in is that wherever they are in their career, if they're aspiring to be officers, this is a great place for them to fulfill their experience or fulfill their knowledge base, or one component.
So it's worth a couple minutes for them to take.
I think they're priceless minutes, because the reports that are written by firefighters. If you go look at the report, it does tell you the rank of the individual. And as far as the worried about somebody tracing you back, if you have any concerns about filling a report out in the fire station using the fire station computer, go home. You can do it from home. You can do it from a library. You can do it from an internet cafe. There's no login or password that are required. So it is a system that allows you to file a report without having to give your name.
We have two groups of customers in the fire service, according to me, and it's my radio show, so I can pretty much tell you what I feel. The first customer group we have are firefighters. And as bosses, we have to remember that, to me, is the most important customer group. The second customer group is the public, because then that's ultimately who we deliver service to. But if we don't take care of our firefighters, and that doesn't always necessarily mean salary, benefits, beautiful trucks, and things like that, but programs such as what we're doing here at the IFC, near-miss reporting, then the second customer base, meaning the public, sort of almost gets taken care of. Why does this program matter to the public? It's really their money that's paying for it.
Well, certainly. I think it really matters to the public, because the better condition mentally and physically the firefighters are in, the better job they do with the public. And I think through the course of our careers, You take a look at firefighters that are tired, firefighters that have had experienced a near miss.
Well, we're tired because we're having to work extra hours because their department's not adequately staffed. I mean, you brought it up. Respond to that. Well, what does that have to do with this?
Well, one of the things that we hope to find are some of those trends. I think Amy mentioned a little bit earlier, and I think those trends will tell us, because these reports are coming from the firefighters themselves. The firefighter will write in a report, or they will select through the drop-down menus that they are fatigued, or that they are shorthanded. And that's the kind of information we can take back to the local and the federal and state officials and say to them, the firefighters themselves, the fire officers themselves, the fire chief himself is telling, or herself is telling us, that they're understaffed.
All the stuff, and this is absolutely great. All the stuff that those of us, those of you listening, know are our issues, this will be a real hard tool to prove what we've been trying to prove.
Agreed.
Like, you know, if firefighters are too tired, well, look at your department. Look at the national stats, and you guys are working all these people overtime. It ain't going to work. Look at your volunteer fire department. Due to these reasons here, you've got to provide better equipment or whatever the case may be. So this, I really think, will be one more hard tool, almost a mallet that, bam, look, here it is. All this stuff we've been telling you, city manager, mayor, and the rest of you for all these years, here is, it came from the chief, it came from the firefighters, it even comes from the public. All this information that we're going to be able to provide, I think that this really may be, or that really may be, a hard-hitting boom. Here, one more reason to understand why we've got to adequately staff, adequately train, to make sure that who wins in the end? The public, right?
No, we agree.
Amy? Hold on. Give her that microphone, John.
The only way we're going to start identifying those trends is getting people to use the system, to go in, enter a report, because right now we have about 200 reports in the system. We're not going to see any emerging national trends with 200 reports. We need people logging on to firefighternearmiss.com. Do some searches on the report, see what's in there. Maybe something will trigger your memory. We don't care if it happened 2 days ago or 20 years ago. If somebody can learn something from it, we need it in the system.
John, 30 seconds, final word.
Well, I'd encourage every firefighter in the United States to visit the system. Anybody listening to this program, take a look at it. As Amy said, visit the reports. Look and see what they're done. It doesn't matter if it's already in there. File another one identical. There are different lessons learned. We've already seen the trends. We've already seen one trend emerging, is that when an incident is reported by a driver, officer, and firefighter, they all saw it a different way. And there are different lessons to be learned by each of us, even on the same event.
So you're suggesting that if all four of us are on an engine company and we have a near miss, each of us should report it separately?
First of all, it'd be great to have four people in every engine company, but yes, all four firefighters should report that.
I told you this was up in smoke with Cheech and Chong, and that maybe made me maybe thinking that way. I apologize. Let me get refocused on this show. Amy, final word, 30 seconds.
I know that every firefighter out there has an experience that can help save another firefighter and help prevent an injury and save a life. And I just can't stress enough, get on the site, check it out. It's been taking firefighters anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes to fill out a report. I think that's 5 to 15 minutes worth well spent.
Perfectly designed for ADD firefighters that have limited span of attention, quick time, quick information that at the end will be of value to all of us in getting home safely. You're listening to Radio at Firehouse.com. We were talking with John Tippett and Amy Holtman from the IFC, Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System. Go to the site, firefighternearmiss.com. Check it out. Go to firehouse.com. Read the article here. You'll be able to click on a link and go right to that site as well. Have a good week. Take care.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.